We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Ian Kennedy to Yasmani Grandal. Yasmani in the air. Right field, way back, and bring him home! Good night, guaranteed right field. Grandal walks it off, and it's 6-5. The Sox are in first place.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Jason Benetti on the call. Yes, he was. NBC Sports Chicago, the hour brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. Grandal hitting the home run off of Liam Hendricks. And, of course, now Grandal will hopefully be catching many games, closing out with Liam Hendricks on the mound as the new White Sox closer. And Yasmani Grandal is interesting, Speaks, because when he signed that $72 million deal, it's the biggest in White Sox franchise history, which is one of the smallest contracts of any team to be the largest in their franchise history. And it was a weird year to judge anybody by, but he didn't really feel like it was worth it from where I was sitting. What about you?
Interesting. The thing is, his flaws became obvious along the way in terms of as a defensive catcher. And we'd heard so much about the framing, and the framing is good. But a lot of the other things are really awkward to watch, and there were some very high-profile moments where they were kind of ugly. And then offensively, he's a volume producer, Danny. He's one of those guys where you look at the end of the year and you're like, man, I know the batting average was 220 or 240 on the high end, but along the way, he got to an OPS well over 8 because he walked a lot and he did certain things, and you realize that the home runs come every once in a while. There wasn't quite enough volume for the offense with the short amount of games for you to kind of feel that along the way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, that was part of what it was. It was like, all right, he had what? It was 8 home runs and 7 doubles. And then I think part of it for me also was not only the high-profile mistakes, which were glaring, but it was also James McCann.
Yeah, James McCann is not far off as a pitch framer and as a game plan designer, which we'd also heard Grandal was great at. McCann is fabulous and has a big-time bond, obviously, with Giolito and other guys.
And so that was why, I mean, I said that very soon after. I was like, it's interesting. Like, there was no way that the White Sox, once they paid Grandal, were going to also pay James McCann. That was one of the first things Mac and I talked about after the move. So it was like, enjoy James McCann while you can. Terrible pun intended. But he ends up signing that deal, right? What did he get? $40 million
with the Mets.
Yeah, right. From the Mets, and so I said was like, he's clearly good, and I just wondered if it was enough of an upgrade from what you really had to make it worth it, especially when your ace last year wasn't throwing to him because he had such a great relationship with James McCann. And I know that Giolito is saying all the right things, and if Grandal's as good as everyone says he is, and Giolito's as good as everybody thinks he is, they'll figure it out and they'll make it work. But I thought it was like an awkward storyline for all of last year that you had this really good catcher that clearly was going to command a real market deal on the open market, and your best pitcher wasn't even thrown to the highest priced free agent in the history of your franchise.
Yeah, and along the way he did. He threw to Grandal early a few times and then switched to McCann and got better. Giolito's stats got better. And then he has the no-hitter while throwing to McCann, and their embrace was so big and so obvious, and it was so obviously like this crowning moment for the Giolito transformation.
Oh, it's also like a public bromance, right? Like they talked about each other in such like reverential terms, and Giolito talking about McCann's role in making him become what he became. It was like, oh, damn. And now you're going to break that up? That's risky.
Yeah, because here was the thing about McCann, is that what McCann brought in terms of game planning and research and analysis when he got here didn't exist on the White Sox. Like it was during the Don Cooper heyday, and it was before they started kind of undermining Coop by getting more technologically savvy and updating things and forcing Coop to come along. And now McCann's not there, but it's no big deal in terms of that stuff because they learned from him. They learned a lot from him. And then they've brought in now guys like Katz, and they've brought in, you know, a pitching infrastructure and tech and data. And the pitchers' minds have been opened, so it's not. But McCann was leading that way. He was first. He was like first within the org to take it upon himself to help pitchers prepare like that. So he was a big, big deal. I remember immediately feeling when Grandal signed, like, man, I felt bad for James McCann because he had the breakout offensively, but also defensively and game plan wise and feeling important. And then last year, seeing him in that one day we were there in the spring, Danny, I remember talking to McCann briefly and saying, hey, man, people know your value around here. And it was just a little bit sad. And nobody else in that entire clubhouse was sad. But McCann
it was just a little awkward. I mean, maybe you as the sentimentalist found it sad, but he was in a professionally awkward situation. And so, like, this year I was thinking about it, and Tanny mentioned him before the show, but, like, he caught 130 games in 2019. With how the White Sox have handled the offseason in terms of their budgeting and what they haven't spent on, right? It's Zach Collins and unproven guys and highly flawed individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Yasmani Grandal is going to have to catch 130-plus games this year, is he not? Like, you're not giving him first baseman days and DH days. Like, Yasmani Grandal is going to be catching 6 out of 7 games a week. Yes,
I'll take the under on that.
You'll take the under on 130.
Yes.
The Lucroy acquisition is an interesting one. You know, he mentioned to James Fegan how, like, you know, you hear this all the time about guys feel like they're in the best shape of their life coming into spring training. It's a cliche, but he told James Fegan that he had this herniated disc problem. It was in his back or his neck or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And now he says he finally feels like himself for the first time in like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. You and know? he had been an elite pitch framer, and that had fallen off big time. He had like kind of devolved into a guy who was bat first because people didn't trust the defense and the framing anymore. So if he's physically feeling better, that'll be a thing. And couldn't you see, Tanny, couldn't you see La Russa falling in love with Lucroy?
I think he already has. Guess who was catching Michael Kopech the other day in his first session? It was Lucroy.
Yeah. And Grandal, though, that bat will find its way in, especially against tough righties. That bat will find its way in, even if one of these pitchers falls in love with Lucroy.
Especially early, too, if they can't get a long-term extension worked out with Andrew Vaughn, if indeed he's the guy at DH. Could see maybe Andrew Vaughn playing a month down in the minors and, you know, service time game. and then maybe just having that DH spot being rotated with a guy like Grandal in there, and then Lucroy maybe playing a little bit more than they initially thought.
Sure. In that scenario, certainly it's there. It's just, to me, this is a year for him, like, full season.
Yeah.
They got rid of McCann. They paid you all this money. Lukewarm start. He's a very significant piece of what they're actually trying to accomplish this year with maximizing a bunch of young dudes with upside in that rotation.
No, I think that's absolutely true. And I think in terms of his mind, he is widely known as kind of a savant on on guys who tip their pitches. He's got a great eye for that. He's known as being a very smart guy in terms of game planning and just super perceptive. And you know that Codify, remember that Codify thing that Liam Hendricks had talked about that he's hip to? Grandal is hip to that and knows about that. So I think you're right that his presence will absolutely step forward in terms of being a little more obvious, perhaps as a leader and a communicator on that team.
Danny, remember you, Dylan Cease told you and Mac about a year ago in spring training that that he was tipping his pitches and Grandal is the one that told him that.
And I'd be like, sick, nice, okay, I'll fix that.
Yes, yeah. That was just a great delivery.
Sick.
To yeah, sick.
And I'd be like, sick, nice, okay, I'll fix that.
Yeah, bruh.
But this year, Grandal said that he thinks that Dylan Cease has Cy Young potential, which is, I mean, you know, praise teammate on teammate and all that stuff, building your guy up. But how he speaks hopefully will carry some weight because he's a different kind of dude. And let's hear a little bit of this. We'll hear Grandal on the kind of the team, and then we'll play back to the tipping thing, Liam Hendricks on Grandal. But let's start on Yasmani Grandal's outlook for the Sox this year.
Having now the veteran guys coming in, guys who've had success in the big leagues for a while now, I feel like it can be even better. And I know that's kind of hard to say, and I can't predict what the future looks like. But from my perspective, it looks bright, and I'm very excited for that. We need to make sure we're in the here. We're working towards a goal. We're not just thinking about it. In order to get to the World Series, there's a lot of checkpoints we need to get to first. And understanding that we need to keep on getting better as we go on. I feel like they got a taste of what the playoffs were last year. I've been in different organizations that, you know, there's a plan, and we knew that yes, World Series is where we want to get to, but we need to make sure that we get into the playoffs. We need to make sure that we take back the Central, win the division, get into the playoffs, and then we go from there.
So, Tanny, I'll give you credit for the observation there. How did he sound different to you compared to other players on the team?
Well, you know, the theme that you're hearing, you know, since we played that Tim Anderson with Chuck Garfine, how they want to kill the other team, and Lucas Giolito echoed those sentiments in his first Zoom chat of the spring. You're seeing, you know, the White Sox are coming out, and they can't wait to get after it and just, you know, bludgeon the other teams. And I like that, you know, like, I think that that's great that everyone is on the same page in that regard, and they don't want to just win. They want to win big. But I think, you know, in baseball, it doesn't always work that way. It's great to have that mentality and having an edge. I definitely prefer to have my team play with an edge. But sometimes it's a long season, man, and it's exhausting, I think, to carry that mentality day in and day out. So when you get back to Grandal, last year there were so many moments where I was asking, you know, we asked on the podcast and we talked about it a little bit on the air, but you're asking, where is the leadership here in this team? Dallas Keuchel being the first one to come out last year. Unconventional, because starting pitchers aren't usually the ones that, you know, have team meetings and say guys are, you know, half-assed in it in the locker room, but that's what he did after the Sox lost to the Tigers early on. But I was wondering the whole time, like, where there's not a whole lot of veteran leadership, and Grandal was the guy that I was looking at. And then I was thinking, okay, well, you know, it's probably not fair to judge a guy coming over in a pandemic, you know, with the lofty expectations of a contract like that, you know, and some guys just are not that, you know. He's definitely a smart guy. He works hard. You know, he's one of the guys, I think, that missed out on not having video last year. So maybe he didn't feel like it was his place quite yet. You know, some guys, it's just not who they are. But it was refreshing to hear Grandal come out and sort of counterpoint what all the young White Sox players have been saying, like, yeah, that's all great, and we all want to win a World Series, but it's so much about staying in the present. And how often did Joe Maddon talk about that when he was here, like being in the moment? And I think that's so important.
It's pretty cool to hear Grandal be a little more assertive in that way. And it's interesting to think about the guys who are the heart and soul of that team. Like, Tim Anderson is all about energy and edge and fun, but he doesn't really talk about other guys in that leadership way. He leads with his energy and edge by example, by who he is, by his own swag, right? By saying, like, well, I love seeing that they throw out lefties there against Oakland and going out and getting three hits in his first three at-bats in the playoff game. And Abreu is very, very solid and exemplary and stoic. But, like, I don't know how much Abreu talks about other guys or tells other guys what to do. We've heard actually mixed things about that. So the kind of leadership Tanny's talking about that you did see from Keuchel saying, yeah, we got work to do, and saying it publicly and not caring whether it gets back to anybody. That kind of thing. There's always room for that, and there's definitely room for that in that clubhouse mix. It's a good spot for Grandal to step up.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I thought it was a good observation, and I thought Hendricks actually, like, how he carried himself with just the badass, I want to be the best, I came here for a ring, but, like, nothing about that dude suggests cutting corners. Like, he wants to pitch every single day and all of that stuff. So I feel like his, like, little edge and dynamic and hit the self-described, like, yeah, all us Australians are crazy and that sort of thing. Like, yeah. I think that will also help bring some a little bit more of an edge to the day-to-day nature of the White Sox. And hopefully they're aware of it. Like, them all embracing the, yeah, we let up after clinching the playoffs this year. Hopefully they do come out game 1 to 162. Obviously there will be slumps and all of that. But hopefully it won't be for a lack of edge for that team. And they realize exactly what they're trying to accomplish. You mentioned the tipping pitches component of it. This is Liam Hendricks, new closer for the White Sox, talking about Grandal, who you heard at the start of this segment, who got him in the playoffs last year.
Well, he told me that I was tipping on the one that he hit a homer off, so that's fun. So it's pretty much the most productive home run I've given up, I think. So there's that. It was nerve-wracking because not only was I throwing to Yaz, but there was about 50 people around socially distanced watching bullpens, because that's apparently a kind of a thing they do here. There's always eyes on everything. So that was different too. And then throwing to him was fine, but he made everything look – he caught everything well, and that for a pitcher makes you feel like your stuff isn't quite there yet. So that wasn't ideal either. But I was excited to throw to him. I was excited for him to get back there, me to see the way he sets up, the way I come at the plate rather than in the box. So it's just a learning game for both of us. But he caught well. I enjoyed throwing to him. I only hit him in the mask once, and that was on a curveball that bounced in the grass. So. Yeah, he said he's watched tape on that, so he has to work on that one as well. So it's just that feeling out process, but I'm excited to work with him on a day-in, day-out basis.
Hey, man, if you've got a savant as a catcher, he better make pitchers better than they've been before, right? And if spotting dudes, Dylan Cease and Liam Hendricks, pitches that they've tipped, it's got to be a pretty good start.
Sick. 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 Surprised Hendricks.
And I'd be like, sick. Nice. Okay, I'll fix that.
What did he say, the most productive home run he's ever given up?
Yeah, because he realized a signal he was given,
that's
how he
awesome.
Tipped it. Yeah,
that's
it's
awesome.
Pretty good.
I was looking at the Jason Stark did his spring training storylines survey that he does every year, talking to 32 different people around baseball, Danny. And the White Sox finished second in the most improved team in the American League poll behind the Blue Jays. Most intriguing storylines in the American League, a lot of Blue Jays angles, and there was one about La Russa. Most intriguing AL storyline was La Russa. And then how about this? The voting for managers under the most pressure in the American League. Number one is Tony La Russa by those 32 people, which is insane.
Sense.
I know, but it's a first-year manager. For
no,
a really good team.
It only by technicality.
Yeah.
We don't know how long he's going to do this. There was scandal around the hiring, and they have huge expectations. Now,
Yes. If
you define pressure solely as like closeness to being fired, then I don't think he has any pressure, because I can't see a scenario in which Jerry Reinsdorf fires Tony La Russa again, right? Like, that's not happening.
Unless embarrassment of the highest order, be it, look.
And even then, it'll be a resignation. He mutually resigned. Like,
I
cannot see a scenario. He gets a DUI tomorrow. I cannot see a scenario where Tony La Russa gets fired for bad performance by the Chicago White Sox.
Hey, totally possible, too, for him to get a DUI tomorrow. Not ruling that out.
Based on his history, of course. But I'm just saying.
But it was torturous. Remember, the offseason was torturous. That's
yes,
the
yes.
word that he keeps using in every media opportunity. The some of these quotes from the people that Stark talked to about La Russa, one rival manager said,
my answer is, I've described to my friends as torture.
Yeah, torture there. I personally think he will be fantastic, says a rival manager. Another, an NL executive said, I love this. Let's bring back Jack McKeon, too. That's funny. How about this? From another longtime MLB exec. This will be interesting. Tony's different, if that's the right word. I'm not close to being as old as him, and I have a hard time speaking the same language as these players. The baseball part, he'll be fine. But relating to these players, I don't know. It'll be interesting. That's a longtime MLB exec telling Jason Stark that anonymously.
Yeah, that checks out, right? All of that kind of makes sense, given exactly what we've been talking about for the last few months since the hiring. I noticed a new feature recently on something we all use, and it cracks me up that it's required. I want to talk to you about it next on The Score.
I didn't watch any games last night. I go straight to Netflix.
I feel like many people, thanks for hanging out on a Friday. It's Parkins and Spiegel on The Score. It's a pizza Friday, is it not?
Ooh, it's a good question. It's a good question. It is Friday, and I know our guys like pizza, but I have no idea if those things connected today.
Yeah, Shane, you want to handle this?
Yeah, or? Guys, thanks for asking. There's a lot of bad info out there about Pizza Friday on a lot of different sources, whether it be the national news, local news, podcasts, just a lot of bad info.
Sometimes guys like you.
Yeah. No question. That loser Dan Bernstein. So on Fridays, it's like an end of the week thing, you know, like it goes Monday is the first day of the week. Then there's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is the fourth day. You're kind of like looking forward to Friday. Friday, we have pizza. So we call it Pizza Friday because it's kind of like that day that we designate to have pizza. Tanny, would you agree?
Yeah. I think I summed it up best when I described it to Wani last week is on Fridays we eat pizza.
Yeah, that's it. That's pretty clear.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Clear. Today we had Venezuelan.
Yeah, it's now Arepa Friday. Here on The Score.
It's BM Basabe Friday.
Wow.
Not to be confused with Luis Alexander Basabe or Luis Basabe. It's BM Basabe Friday.
Wait a minute. Is this a true thing? You guys didn't have pizza today?
That's correct.
Well, we've never really had pizza on Fridays.
Kind of,
you know,
garbage is this?
It's always been Venezuelan Fridays.
I was dragged through the mud for violating the sanctity of Pizza Friday, which not 2 weeks later has been thoroughly abandoned for Guatemalan food? Is that what you said?
Do you know why we dragged you through the mud?
Venezuelan.
Oh, Venezuelan. Okay.
Two locations in Chicago, on Montrose and down here, downtown.
We dragged you through the mud, Speaks, because you damn right deserved it.
I am not questioning the dragging. I'm saying that the sanctity is a bunch of malarkey, since you have no respect to the sanctity yourself, sir.
Well, here's the thing. We get to decide how to respect the thing we created.
Also, it just hasn't been the same since, you know, from a couple weeks ago when you really botched that order.
Right.
It has. I think you took the joy out of Pizza Friday.
It's got nothing to do with Lynn giving up pizza for Lent. It's got nothing to do with Herb not eating pizza right now. It's got everything to do with you being a bad pizza orderer.
Yeah. So I
took
their faith in Pizza Friday has been shaken to its core by you putting onions on half of that pizza.
We had to turn to the Venezuelan Speaks.
Yeah, it's desperate times in the studio. But
so good,
so happy,
so good. Arepas, oh, so good.
Why are you pronouncing
happy
it like that?
Happy Arepa Friday.
He's pronouncing
it correctly.
It's because
the alternative is saying it how Danny said it.
He's respectful.
Which I wouldn't say on the air.
Arepas.
You come on.
A rapist? Right. What did Danny talk about? A rapist? He ordered a rapist for Danny?
Listen, you're the one who's brought up the most offensive thing on the show so far this week. I'm just not trying to top you. As long as I come in somewhere behind, hey, you're a German comedian. What about the Third Reich? people can listen on the radio.com rewind feature. But yeah, Netflix. So congratulations on your Pizza Friday or whatever it is now.
Appreciate that. Again, we had Venezuelan today, Bien Masabe.
Bien Masabe, and it's not because Lynn is giving up pizza for Lent. It's not a solidarity move whatsoever.
Yeah.
And Pizza Friday is definitely not in turmoil right now.
Right, for sure. Okay. Definitely not. A lot of bad info out there.
Well, if you guys need to ever get the true word out, you have this platform at your disposal at all times. So, just as an offer, as an olive branch to Pizza Friday or whatever it's going to be going
forward.
You know,
to be honest, I don't know if I trust this platform to get the truth out there.
I get it. I understand.
Let me just say that I think this bit myself is just getting going. Like, we're just getting started with this. Like, where it can go is...
Bit?
Speaks, we can't help but notice. I'm sorry, Danny. I know you want to talk about the Netflix streaming platform. We can't help but notice as soon as like you got the most embarrassed about us calling you out for Pizza Friday, your video disappeared from the Twitch stream.
Not connected. Not connected.
Oh, for sure.
I was eating something and I didn't feel like eating on camera. So that's what happened.
You're eating something.
Can't you just wait for the break, man? They're like 10 minutes long.
I had bites during the break, but then there was another bite available there, and I couldn't help myself. Look, it's a Friday. Sometimes Wani pours himself an iced tea, all right?
Wani just texted me, like, fresh off the boat with Jimmy Johnson, a link to an article about the Bears quarterback battle being between Mitch Trubisky and Sam Darnold. And I was like, Dave, talk to me about the fishing.
Dave,
like,
you see the photo on his Twitter?
I did.
With all the fishing poles?
It's like they're at a fishing store, but it's just, I think it's just Jimmy Johnson's boathouse.
Yes. No, yeah, he absolutely is not a fishing store. Yeah, it looks ridiculous. He has not sent me any pictures, but he said it was a great time trading old war stories. It just gets better with age.
Why does Jimmy have a shirt on, though? I don't think that's really him, if he's wearing a shirt.
Yeah, it's disappointing. It is disappointing because I just picture Jimmy Johnson just perpetually sunburned with a Heineken in his hand on the water like 20 hours a day. But, all right, everyone has the discussion, right? What are we going to watch tonight? People turn on Netflix. Netflix is just like synonymous with entertainment these days. The majority of people, it's like, oh, the price goes up $2 a month, and most people continue to pay Netflix. The company is just doing unbelievable numbers, and they have all this content out there.
Yeah, every year, man. I saw they added 36.2 million new subscribers last year. Like, I didn't know there were that many people left who didn't have Netflix. I had no
idea. It's becoming synonymous with entertainment. It's becoming a utility, basically. I mean, obviously they're not there yet, and people are like, oh, Parker, it's your privilege. But like, yes, I am. But the vast majority of people have Netflix at this point, and they're going in that direction. We are so addicted to it in that way, in the entertainment, that they apparently found a need. Have you noticed the play something option? This is...
Give me something.
Exactly. Couples around the world are so indecisive on what to watch that we have trusted the Netflix algorithm to be like, I just need Netflix. Give me something. And of the thousands and thousands of things in their library, they know you so well. We're genetically engineered. They know what we click on and our Facebook ads and our Google searches, and it's all intertwined with your credit card purchases and your viewing habits and all of that, that Netflix now has a play something button, and it just plays what they think you'll like, and more often than not, they do a pretty good job.
Give me something.
Have you allowed the play something button to dictate your entertainment?
I didn't actually continue to watch it, but I was just curious what would happen. And they played my wife likes the Windy City Rehab and like the home construction type shows, and they played one of their own original like Beverly Hills Mansion Rehab, whatever the hell the show was.
And Selling I was like, Sunset or whatever.
Selling Sunset. And I was like, I have no interest in this, but Steph absolutely would. Like, and she happens to have signed up for the account. They know everything, man. But how did we get to a point where the button is literally play something?
How American is that?
Right?
To have all the excess. And this has always been a million channels, but nothing on, right? Forever, this has always been how it kind of feels. But we have taken it to that extreme that now we have a direct app with a million different things. And we can't decide what to watch. This is very, very common. I mean, I'll sit there and me and my wife, she'll turn and like, I don't know, what are we going to watch? And you'll sit there and browse. So this is for the people who are tired of browsing.
Yeah, and that there's too much content that you're just turning over your time to the algorithm and saying, play some. And you're right. It's very American. It's very gluttonous. Like super, right? There was small. There was medium. There was large. There was extra, and then super size. At McDonald's, we got to super size. You got to make it bigger. You got to give more. Play something.
But this is sort of that weird unique American thing of a million things to do, but no idea, still no idea what to do. So all we've done is continue to provide options, 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 while everyone is still searching for the meaning of everything and like what is actually the best thing to do.
Do you guys not agree, though, that there are just simply too many options on Netflix? I get overwhelmed scrolling through. I'm much more likely to go to Hulu and go to like the hubs, the HBO Max and Showtime hubs in Hulu.
It all. I know there's different volumes, like different amounts on different things, but it all. Look, I have most of it. You know, I feel like I personally, and you know, and maybe it's a product of the age or whatever, but like I feel like every moment I'm choosing to watch something, I'm choosing against everything else in the history of recorded media. You know what I mean? Like it's just all right. I'll choose this, but there are millions of options I'm not choosing, and I don't know if I'm making the right choice. If I really allow myself to dwell on it, I'll think about, man, I could be watching this or that or this or that or this. So Shane, like I know Hulu has less, but you know, I feel like the Netflix algorithm kind of narrows it down too much. Like, hey, I'm not just dark documentary guy. You know, I'm not just that guy. Give me some options here. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's whole realms of stuff that I don't even access because it doesn't bother to show it to me.
I don't think you – it's how I – there's two things that I would say to that. One is I feel guilty when I'm rewatching something, even though I love rewatching things that I love for, like, the mindless nature of it and the enjoyment and to pick up, like, really intricate details of something, right? Like, to me, if you're rewatching The Sopranos, rewatching The Wire, rewatching Breaking Bad, it's rewatching A Curb Your Enthusiasm, like, it's timeless. I've seen those shows so many times, but I absolutely love it, and it's beautiful. But there is now a little bit of guilt where it's like, but I haven't seen 6 Feet Under.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't finished The Americans. But maybe I should watch these new things and try all of these new things. But so the idea that there are people out there that are just doing the play something, I just – lacking that ability to make decisions is a scary thought that the bots and like big machine and big tech and Silicon Valley, because don't you think like Netflix is one of the best run companies in the world just based on their stock, their user growth, exponential, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What other companies are going to do this?
Well, look, they're not first, obviously. There's Google with Are You Feeling Lucky, right? That's one on your search options. You could just
sure,
say I'm feeling lucky
on music.
Well, that's music is first. Like the first of all of these things. I remember when I was producing Sound Opinions with Cotton DeRogatis, and we had the people on who were just launching this thing called Pandora, and it was they talked about the Music Genome Project, and I'm pretty sure that was the first of anything of its kind, or at least the first successful one that was like. What it does is, get this, it takes what you listen to and breaks it down into a million different categories and then decides other things you might listen to. And now, of course, every music service does that. You can choose specific song radio or artist radio on any of the different services that do it. So we have, a lot of people have since turned over their musical time to that. And discovered lots and lots of new music that way because it's in 3 or 4 minute bites of songs and you can stop. You can pull the cord at any time. But this, like, play something, an hour feels different. It just does.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, people on text and Twitch are saying, like, sometimes you just want something on in the background and you don't want to take the time to make a decision on what it would be. And, I mean, I don't know about you. Have you ever run into, like, feeling guilty about how long it took you to make a decision to watch something and then you decide against watching something because it's too long? Like, Steph and I will be like, do we want to start this movie? It's 2 hours and 20 minutes. Is that too long? Or are we going to be tired, not make it up to the end of it? But then, like, 15 or 20 minutes later, we make a decision to watch something that's 2 hours. You know, and it's like we could have just hit play on the 220 vehicle and we would have been in the exact same spot.
You would have been there. Yeah, absolutely.
But I do that all the time.
I know. And here's the problem. There's also been lots of times where, like, we'll be sitting there and we'll look around and we will look around for 15 minutes and just get frustrated and angry at the entire process, angry at each other, and watch absolutely nothing. It's like, what the hell have I been doing with my life? So maybe this is more useful than I care to think.
I don't know. I saw it and it scared me a little bit. Because it feels like the machine's taking over. It does.
Yeah, it does. Well, they have in a lot of ways. If we really stop to think about it, and the social dilemma, as someone is pointing out, is incredibly compelling and Terrifying to watch. Let's see. Where did I see that? Oh, yeah, on Netflix. That's where.
imagine hitting the play something button and it's The Social Dilemma.
That's very Inception-y, all those things together. But how about yesterday, right around this same time frame, we're talking about the algorithm that predicted that Fernando Tatis Jr. was going to be such a great pro that it made sense for these Jamokes with Big League Advance to give him $500,000, if that's what they gave him or whatever it was. That an algorithm decided that for them. And they're like, good job, algorithm. Way to go. More people have written about that today, by the way.
It's getting a lot of play. But yeah. I couldn't believe it. Play something. We should all check tonight. Everybody should just hit play something on Netflix and see what it suggests.
I already do it, Danny. Every time I hit the play something, it just draft day comes up. I can't explain it. It's every time.
Okay. Well, it's like Mac never left.
Well, it is draft day.
Very comfortable, Danny.
I watched Pitch Perfect 2 last night because of Flula.
Good.
I've probably seen it about 20 times, but I had to take it in again.
You know, maybe we'll watch it. We watched the whole Flula video from the Twitch stream this morning. It is glorious. If anybody didn't catch that, that might be my favorite segment of the 10-day long run of the Parkinson Spiegel show.
We're talking to Flula Borg, our senior American sports correspondent. So did you enjoy The Last Dance, the Bulls documentary?
Oh, and that was when I took it personal. Yes, of course.
It became personal with me.
Yeah. Oh, wow, nice. Oh, you had it ready for the beep beep. That was very good, guys. I like this.
Thank you.
Those kind of moments. Like, at one point I asked him about Judd Bushler being fun to say. He's like, oh, thank you for the leading question. You know?
He's great. He was fantastic. And Shane, we're going to have him on again, yes?
Opening day is the plan.
Opening day.
It's tremendous.
Perfect. Means tremendous. That you didn't defend him too much. Good job.
It was close. I had to pay him.
In Bitcoin, as requested.
Score swag, which I guess people want.
Yeah. And that's news to me that we have. So that's exciting. Pay us in score swag. There was a 26-second video that was not on Netflix yet that I think we should discuss as well coming up on The Score.
And yes, you NASA idiots, it is still a planet.
Thanks for hanging out, Parkinson Spiegel on The Score. Speaks' camera is off. He's probably eating. We are just a picture of professionalism around here. Love this show.
Forgot to turn it back on. My bad. Here we are. Let's go.
Yeah, appreciate it. Search 670 The Score on Twitch. You get your questions in for one last thing at the end of the show. Did you see the footage that's come back from the rover that we have video now from the surface of Mars with sound?
I saw some of the footage, and I heard Bernsey talking with just incredible nerdy excitement about the three different missions over the next several years, or several decades, I guess, of what they're trying to do with the Mars rover. That one, like this one, is just like, you know, grabbing some pieces of Earth and then leaving not Earth, but you know, soil, whatever. Bottom Mars Earth, Mars dirt.
All right, now hold on. I saw Kyle Long tweeting something about that video being fake.
The dumbest thing you've ever said. That video was fake?
Kyle Long was tweeting something that, like, somebody told him that video he tweeted about was fake, and the video he tweeted about was the rover on Mars scanning.
Oh. I don't think it. I mean, maybe it was.
I don't think so.
All right. They landed a rover on Mars.
Yeah.
I know that's true.
This rover is grabbing like bits of ground and leaving it there on the ground. And then an entire other mission is going there to pick up the samples that this rover is leaving behind because it's a different task and they can't program the rovers to do multiple tasks like that. But anyway. Yeah.
And no, I think it's cool to feel like you're living in the future. Like if you
switch the samples.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Samples of the Mars rock. Like, you know, but if you talk to people what it was like when, you know, man walked on the moon, you talk to your older relatives or whatever, it was a hugely interesting thing. And this time it doesn't feel like I've read about it feeling then because just so many other things technologically have happened that the moon seemed so unattainable and obviously space travel in some ways has been normalized. But it's cool, man. Like, I am not nearly as geeky or into it as Bernsey obviously is about everything. But it felt like a significant moment and a cool thing to be a part of. And it made me think, and maybe this is just me as a parent, which is a relatively new experience. I was like, I wonder when Owen is in high school or college or whatever and starting to be somewhat interested in his first experience with astronomy.
Owen!
There it is. Yeah, the same one and the same. Like, I wonder how far along we'll be, how much further along we will be in space exploration in 15 or 20 years from this moment. And it was just kind of a cool thing to think about. And I'm kind of bummed that that video is fake that I saw earlier today, because it looked badass. And I also love the movie The Martian with Matt Damon, and I loved the book.
I love that movie too. I haven't read the book. I thought the movie was good.
Book is great. It's one of the most rewatchable movies I've ever seen. I love movies like that, like where you just pick it up at any point and you immediately know. Like Castaway is the same way. It's like,
sure, Apollo 13 is the same way.
Yeah, 127 hours. It's like, I'm trying to get out of this hole. I'm trying to get home from space. I'm trying to get off this island. I'm trying to get
Goodfellas.
Goodfellas is not that type of movie. Also a great movie, but not that type of movie. But yeah.
you know what the Mad Dog would say about The Martian. True story.
True story.
True story.
Yeah, that would be his very apt follow up question.
Would you go see Daredevil?
Which one is that now?
That's Ben Affleck's new movie about the guy who's a blind crime fighter who turns into Daredevil.
True story?
True story.
It's the one that breaks me. It breaks me in half.
It's really good. Oh, a texter God. Says, my girlfriend started crying during the Mars landing. When I asked why she's not normally emotional in the moment, she said, I never thought we would put humans on Mars. Then I had to disappoint her.
We didn't.
Not
do
there
it.
Yet.
But yeah, man. No, what you're feeling is familiar to our parents and to some of our grandparents. Imagine being at the beginning of the 60s. And Kennedy says, I believe at his inauguration, by the end of the decade, we're going to have somebody on the moon. And then he dies and gets killed, and a whole bunch of other people get killed. But guess what? 69, July 1969, person on the moon. It's bananas.
Nice.
We've done stuff like that.
It's cool.
Know? So, yeah.
It's a cool thing. Human achievement. Exploration. Science. Yes, yeah, science. Yeah. Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad. It's just like, oh, I don't really understand any of this.
Sure.
But it's cool.
Yeah.
And it's nice to know. Isn't it nice to know that, like, they did something, they invested in it, and it worked, and the scientists are like, this is going to be worthwhile. I'm like, oh, good. It's nice. It's nice when things work. Not a lot of things have been working recently.
I struggle with the end game. I really do. I struggle with the end game. All right, so let's say they figure out that at the bottom of this lake, and what looks like a crater and what looks like a riverbed on Mars.
Right, if there's a life source and there's water and it's inhabitable. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, right? So what's the end game?
You struggle with the end game of if we could figure out another planet that would be inhabitable? You
we're
can't
go
see
there?
How that would be a benefit?
Well, I could see how that, but I don't think it's Mars. Do you? I don't think we're going to.
How do I know? I don't know. I mean, it's the closest planet. So if there's going to be a planet that's inhabitable for people a couple hundred
score
years.
Scorehouse.
Yeah, Scorehouse Mars, baby. Let's do it. How would it be? What do you mean you struggle with the end game if another planet
right,
could sustain
look,
human life? How is that struggling with the end game?
I'm willing to make a bet with you right now. Nobody is ever going to live on Mars in our lifetime. All right? Got that?
I have no idea. But so you're only interested in potential scientific achievements for our lifetime? Yeah. There will be human life after us. And it's worth exploring in that direction.
You mean at 6 o'clock? That's Joe O, right?
Yeah. Exactly. By the time Joe O comes on the air, humans will be living on Mars.
Okay,
and Spiegel will no longer care. As we send you into the weekend, we will give a cursory a bit of attention into the latest name in the Bears QB carousel coming up on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.